When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry, served by Applebee's.
Welcome to the Fantasy Football Happy Hour. I'm Connor Rogers alongside a very company man edition of Matthew Berry, Mr. Football Night in America, Mr. Applebee's, and of course, the dapper as ever, as always, Jay Croucher.
This is a Bud Light, by the way. This is a Bud Light. So, you know, seriously, company man right here.
We can run a lot of sponsored segments with the pace you're on right now. Listen, we're going to cover a lot from the NFL draft, and to be helping us with that in just a little bit from RotoWorld, Eric Samulski and RotoPat. But before we do, fellas, the entire draft is in the books. A long, long day three. Matthew, any favorite picks to close out this stage of the draft?
Well, I listen, a lot of favorite picks. Obviously, the Commanders, A++. I don't know if you can even give an A++++. Draft grade, but I thought Adam Peters in his first draft as the general manager of the Washington Commanders, your future Super Bowl champion, Washington Commanders, I thought he crushed it every single pick. It's weird. You rarely get seven future Hall of Famers in one draft, and yet that's what Adam Peters did today. But I'll say this. I'll start here. I thought we talked about this last night, Connor, that why was Troy Franklin dropping? Like, I don't understand why Troy Franklin was dropping. It seemed weird to me. But when you think about, you know, think about Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, right? I mean, like, reuniting a talented wide receiver with his college quarterback often works out. And so Sean Payton, early in day three, getting Troy Franklin, reuniting him with Bo Nix, you know, I think it's a great landing spot. Offensive-minded coach who's obviously had a lot of success in terms of throwing the ball down the field, and you think about his competition for targets. Yes, you've got Cortland Sutton there who's been on the trade block, who's been rumored to be traded, so we'll see what happens if Sutton is still a Bronco come September. But even if Sutton is there, it's Marvin Mims, who we love Marvin Mims, but Marvin Mims, for whatever reason, couldn't get in the field last year. Then it's Josh Reynolds, he of dropping on 4th-and-2. Tim Patrick off of a major injury. Like, the fact of the matter is Sean Payton wants to be a pass-first offense. There should be plenty of targets to go around. And so Bo Nix, who obviously has a tremendous amount of rapport with Troy Franklin, I thought this was an amazing landing spot for Franklin. Good pick for the Broncos as Sean Payton revamps this offense. I thought that was just a home run, especially on day three. Great value.
Yeah, Matthew, you're kind of honing in on opportunity there with that one. And that's one that comes to mind for me when you look at the Giants taking Tyrone Tracy Jr. out of Purdue.
Our guy.
We've talked about him a lot now. And, you know, you drafted him in Dynasty with a pre-draft Dynasty draft. So you
thanks
make out
to
like
your
a,
pick. You told me you made up for
made
the
up
McConkey
for Ladd
hate.
McConkey. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You so made
this
up
was
for the
my
McConkey
redemption
hate.
Tour.
You gave I got to give full credit to Connor Rogers. Connor Rogers gave me Tyrone Tracy. And I was just like, I don't know, it feels a little early. And you're like, just trust me, do not leave your draft without Tyrone Tracy. This is what Connor Rogers said to me over text. We have a secret text, Jay Croucher. Screw you.
Yeah, yes,
so just me and Connor. And on our secret text thread that doesn't have Jay on it or producer Damian, he's telling me, do not leave your draft without Tyrone Tracy. I think you should take him here. I took him. And the best feeling in any draft is when the text thread or the DMs blow up saying, F you, Barry. Screw you. That was my guy. That was my next pick. How dare you? They were all so bitter. I give full credit to Connor Rogers. Thank you very much. Tyrone Tracy.
Thank you, Matthew. Yes, I mean, he goes into a situation where, number one, RB4 for me in this draft. So I valued the player more as a day two guy. The Giants get him on day three. I mean, he's realistically one Devin Singletary injury away from being the guy in the Giants backfield. And with that being said, I think he could take the third down snaps over Eric Gray, Gary Brightwell. This is somebody who played wide receiver at Iowa. He's got really good ball skills. He can run a full route tree. You want him on the field in those passing situations, but he's such a creative, dynamic runner at the position since switching to running back, which he did successfully at Purdue, that I think there's a long-term starting potential here for the Giants. I love the opportunity right out of the gate. Jay Croucher, I know that makes you happy hearing as a New York Giants fan.
It's a lifelong New York Giants fan as of late January this year. I'm also, my favorite pick was the New York Giants too. It was Theo Johnson, tight end out of Penn State, who all of a sudden the Giants, who I was lambasted for selecting as my team, even though I can never, ever be accused of jumping on a bandwagon, given that the stock of the team is at an all-time low. But now adding Neighbors, also solidifying at running back, and now adding Theo Johnson, where I think the thing here is that just with opportunity, like, we don't know if Darren Waller is going to play football next year. Yeah. Theo Johnson is just going to be the starting tight end for the New York Giants. I know that that doesn't, on paper, that doesn't sound amazing. It's like being the starting tight end for the Carolina Panthers, which I'm going to get to as well. But I think we forget that 2 years ago, this Giants offense was perfectly fine with Daniel Jones playing really well, having the best season of his career under Brian Daboll. I think the offensive line is going to be in a much better spot this season than last, and just with Neighbors spacing the field as well. I mean, Connor, what do you think of Theo Johnson? What do you think of the fit?
Well, I think number one, the fit you like, because Daboll will understand how to use a weapon like this with the height at 6'6", the long arms, really good straight line speed, not the twitchiest guy in the world, but keep the route tree simple for him. Have him run the seam, utilize him in the red zone. This is someone that did catch 7 touchdowns at Penn State, but the overall reception total and target share was not very high. So I look at Theo Johnson and I like the effort as a blocker. He's really gotten a lot better as a blocker over the last year or two there. So it was kind of puzzling why Penn State didn't utilize him as much as they should have, because the flashes were, honestly, Jay, really, really good when they actually threw him the ball. And you nailed it. It feels like if Darren Waller ultimately steps away from this team, and, you know, just kind of reading his mindset right now, it feels like he's already got 1 foot out the door. The Giants go, okay, well, we'll get one step ahead and get this guy in here.
Yeah, yep. I just want to say this real quickly about Theo Johnson. Like, there are rumors, to your point, Connor Rogers, about Darren Waller might be retiring, and you have to feel like, whether that's been public or not, that the Giants probably have at least a sense of where Darren Waller is leaning. And we just talk about fantasy. Fantasy success comes from literally two simple things: talent and opportunity. Connor, you just talked about the talent. So let's talk about the opportunity real quickly. You mentioned Malik Neighbors. Great. What does Daniel Jones do really well? He throws in the middle of the field. He throws between the hashes. That's where he's most comfortable. That's where all the underlying metrics show you. This is where he's most effective. And so a healthy Daniel Jones, and you think about a Brian Daboll offense, whether it was Cole Beasley back in Buffalo, or, you know, kind of the, we saw a couple of moments here and there with Darren Waller in New York as well. So we expect friend of the podcast, Jalen Hyatt, to move inside this year. So Hyatt and now Theo Johnson, you've got Malik Neighbors on the outside. You still have to respect Darius Slayton and his speed as well. And Tyrone Tracy, who, as we just talked about, is a great threat out of the backfield, a converted wide receiver who has nice hands. All of a sudden, the passing offense of a Giants team that should be down and throwing this year suddenly becomes, at least for fantasy purposes, kind of interesting. And I think Theo Johnson, immediately to your point, Jay, is on the tight end 2 radar, assuming Darren Waller decides to retire later this year.
Yep. And just before it slips my mind, also just want to draw attention to the fact that Matthew referred to the Commanders as Super Bowl champions in the future. And the beautiful thing about that is that time as a concept stretches into eternity, for all we know. And so I think you can continue using that terminology as the Commanders may need a lot of that chunk of eternity to get that done.
I think I've got 40 years left. You know, hopefully more. Hopefully more. You want to bet the under, Jay? I understand that. That's fair.
Not the man with your diet soda tendencies.
40 years plus 800, Jay?
34 and a half is the number. Okay. Yeah. You cut out diet soda and it goes up to 50 and a half. You can live forever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, don't forget the fried chicken fingers that I like so much.
Sure.
And the pizza. But anyway, I think I've got 40 years left. So we've got 4 decades to make my prediction come true. Future Super Bowl champion, Washington Commanders. But I appreciate you setting the line. So if I say 40 years, I get to 90 something. If I say 40 years, Jay Croucher, you're setting the line at what?
I would take the under on 40, which is kind of grim to tell you to your face.
Yeah.
But no, I'd say, what's the average life expectancy? It's like 80, 82 for a man in America, you're going to say? Why are you just putting yourself 8 years above?
Yeah, I think I'm a survivor, if I'll be honest with you. And the other thing here, Jay, is that from what I understand, like, I think it, I don't know if it's 73 or 76, but it's one of those ages where it's like, if you get to 73, if like 73, 75, if you can, that's like the age range where it's like really tough. And if you get through 73 to 75, kind of that range, you're home free. That's the age. And candidly, 73 is not that far off for me. So I think I'm okay. I think I can sort of power through.
I thought that was going a different direction where you're going to be like, and I got through the Todd Collins era in Washington, so I can get through 73 to 75 and push on to
I got through the Dan Snyder era. But Todd Collins was nothing. I can't tell you how annoyed I get with all these David Tepper tweets. You know, like he walks into a restaurant to steal the hat from the guy and bitch about the sign. And people are like, oh, worst owner in the NFL. I'm like, he's not even close to the worst owner in NFL history. He's not even close to the most embarrassing. Stop it. You're not even – stop it. Do you understand? Like, I could do like 20 minutes on all the stuff that Dan Snyder's done. Dan Snyder's the
we
worst.
We have.
And I will again.
Many
Dan
times.
Snyder's the worst sports owner in professional history. Worst professional sports owner in history.
Yeah.
And it's not a particularly close race. Like, it's Panthers a long way to get to second.
Panthers have made the Super Bowl twice this century. Like, there's nothing. Yeah. I mean, they didn't win either of them, but they got there. And they got there pretty recently, 2015.
Without Tepper, but sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
But by the way, and we'll get to this later in the show, I kind of like what the Panthers have done this year in the draft, Connor Rogers.
I mean, Jay, why don't you take it away from there? I know you had said Theo Johnson wasn't the only tight end that caught your eye in the draft.
Yes, Jatavion Sanders caught my eye as well. We talked about opportunity. Well, there's a wealth of opportunity in Carolina, and I know that they have strengthened their skill position room, but they've also strengthened their offensive line. I just don't think that Bryce Young, I just don't think he can be any worse than he was last year. And I know that people are starting to write him off. Let's see how he does with a bit more of a real supporting cast. And also the quarterback whisperer, Dave Canales. So I think that his ecosystem is going to be just better. And with Jatavion, I think that, you know, with what he can do as a receiver, he could provide immediate value. Connor, I know, I think he was, he's like 50th on your big board and he went outside the top 100. What do you think of him?
Yeah, I think he landed, because of the testing, he landed at 68th. I was a little disappointed. I thought he'd be a more dynamic, explosive athlete, but I think he plays as one. When I watched Jatavion Sanders, he understands how to shield defenders. He's got good acceleration, especially when they play him off the line of scrimmage. He's not a guy that you're going to be asking to block all the time, which kind of enhances his fantasy value. This was a big-time recruit when he got to Texas, and I think people forgot about how special of a player he could be because he had to share targets with Adonai Mitchell. He had to share targets with Xavier Worthy. Jordan Whittington, their third receiver, he got drafted today as well. He's been dealt with an offense that's had a backfield of Bijan Robinson, top 10 pick. Jonathan Brooks went in, you know, obviously the top 60 as well. So I think when you look at Jatavion Sanders, he made the most of his targets. He was a good college tight end, and he'll be a good NFL tight end. Matthew, I know you had one more day three pick.
Before we get there real quickly, just to comment on that, like, again, we're going to talk a little bit later about sort of like, you know, fantasy winners and losers in terms of this draft. And that'll be a topic that us and every other show in the universe talks about over the next week, over the next month.
But we're better.
But I will say that, and he's not who I'm going to pick, but I will say very quietly, Bryce Young had a very good fantasy draft. To your point, Jay Croucher. Like, for all the criticism of David Tepper in the front office of the Carolina Panthers, they are doing what they can to Caleb Williams this, which is to put as much talent around Bryce Young to try to make him work, to make him a success, right? So they add Deontay Johnson in the offseason. You mentioned Dave Canales, who resurrected Baker Mayfield, and then before that resurrected Geno Smith, the quarterback whisperer Dave Canales, right? They added Jonathan Brooks, who's just an explosive playmaker in the backfield. They add Sanders now, right? They draft Leggett. Like, I mean, all of a sudden, like, you can't sit here and say, like, well, he didn't have anyone. By the way, they still have Adam Thielen. Maybe they can squeeze one more season out of Adam Thielen, Connor. So I think Bryce Young is a pretty big winner this offseason and this draft in terms of, you know, the talent that the Carolina Panthers have put around him.
Yeah, I think so. And listen, to be fair to Bryce, who really, because of how amazing Stroud was last year and it looking like a tough decision after the trade, I mean, it's one of the worst situations rookie quarterbacks ever walked into in the history of the NFL. So there has to be some kind of, you know, pendulum swing the other way. And the Panthers are doing everything possible to make sure that that actually happens by getting guys that can make plays off of the quick passing game. And we're going to see that in Canales' offense.
We're 12 months removed from Bryce Young basically being a consensus choice over CJ Stroud for the most part. That's where most people fell. And I understand that the past year went as well as it possibly could have gone for CJ Stroud and as badly as it could have gone for Bryce Young. But like the NFL exists in small samples. Like we haven't given Bryce Young enough of a chance to fail conclusively. And look, if you ask me, like, is this guy going to make an all-pro team? Like, probably not. Like, percentages would say probably not, but there is still a chance that he can absolutely be the guy who was the consensus number one overall pick. And this year, I think there is enough around him where we will get a chance to evaluate him fairly. Because last year, he was just drawing dead. Like, he was drawing dead in that offense. They had no talent around him. Team was an absolute mess. This year, it seems like now they have the pieces where, like, all, if you're the Panthers, all you care about this year is just figuring out, like, is Bryce Young actually the guy? And I think they have enough now where they should be able to evaluate that. And maybe Jatavion Sanders can be part of that.
Yeah, I was going to bring up that same point, Joe. You made it more eloquently than I would. But the fact, like, this guy was the starting quarterback of Alabama. It's not like, you know, not trying to throw shade here, but it's not like he's Trey Lance where, you know, he was beating up on some smaller schools and there was like a gap in his playing time and you sort of had to just base it on the skills. Like, this guy was the starting quarterback of Alabama who rolled through the SEC. It's not like he hasn't faced top talent or, you know, elite defenses or people scheming against him. And so give this kid a chance. They've also improved the offensive line, which I think is important as well. They drafted a guard in the draft. And so I do think, look, we don't know if he's going to be a fantasy superstar. We don't know if this guy's going to be a legit NFL quarterback. But I'm with you, Jay, that it is way too early to write him off. And I think that if you are a Bryce Young fan or a supporter or a Carolina Panthers fan, you have to be very pleased with what the team and organization has done in free agency in the draft to try to make Bryce Young work.
Yeah, and speaking of teams that have are trying to make life easier on their quarterback, the Broncos take Bo Nix, and then they went right to work with that. Matthew, you talked about Troy Franklin. I'll double down on what they did, especially here on day three when they take Audric Estime out of Notre Dame. And this is someone that he runs the 4.7 40, and everybody instantly writes him off. And I understand a 40 time for a running back like that is a little bit, you know, it catches your eye. But when you turn on the tape, the ability to create force, you know, miss tackles, the power running, the downhill ability, and then he still tested well in other areas. The jump specifically, I mean, you look at the 38-inch vertical, you look at the 10.5 broad, he's 221 pounds. So it's a little bit different from a guy that's 190 pounds in terms of the 40 time. He's carrying a lot of muscle mass. I look at Audric Estime and go, listen, he's going to take over what Samaje Perine's role was probably supposed to be pretty quickly, in my opinion. And when you just look at the roster, the way it's constructed, a team that wants to run the ball a lot, Javonte Williams with a big-time injury history, it wouldn't shock me if Estime is fantasy relevant at some point during his rookie season.
Yeah, potentially. You know, it's obviously it's a crowded backfield. They like Jaleel McLaughlin. Like, they had it there. And Peyton does like to use multiple running backs, makes it tough. And so as long as Javonte Williams is healthy, and that's the key, it's hard to see Estime having, you know, anything more than like some PPR value in deeper leagues is kind of a flex play. But to your point, love the player, love the landing spot in terms of Peyton will use him creatively. But obviously, pecking order, he'll compete with McLaughlin, I think, for snaps, right? Because Javonte is the 1A. One other day three pick that I loved, Connor, I'm going to stay at the running back position. And let's talk about your guy, Jalen Wright. You and I have talked about Jalen Wright. I appreciate, by the way, this is me answering Steven, our producer's email before you got to him, because I know you would have liked to rather talk about Jalen Wright, because I know he's one of your guys. You had him higher than consensus. You love the player, and I'm sure you have to love the fit of Jalen Wright, an explosive player, over 7 yards per carry in his college career, going to Miami, where Raheem Mostert, who's had a ton, friend of the podcast, but Raheem Mostert, who has had, you know, obviously injury history, Devon Achane missed 6 games last year, Jeff Wilson has also dealt with injuries, Mike McDaniel, the rich getting richer, and just an explosive running back that he gets for this crazy Dolphins offense.
I mean, Matthew, this is the equivalent when you do the draft like me and you write up a wide receiver and you go, I like this guy. I hope the Chiefs take him. Right. And this is what it is with the running backs. I like this guy. He's really fast and explosive. He beats people to the corner all the time because of the foot race. I hope the Miami Dolphins take him. And the Dolphins did not only just draft Jalen Wright, who was a top 60 player for me. I thought he was the second best running back in the entire draft. They traded a future third round pick to come back in and get him. So they paid a significant cost, which tells you what they think of him. Now with Jalen Wright, he's bigger than Devon Achane. So when you look at it like that, I understand why this backfield looks confusing right now. But if you look at this backfield in a 2-year window instead, Jalen Wright's going to be a big time player in this run game, Matthew.
There's no question. Like Donis, he's somebody that is like kind of a late round flyer, given the explosiveness of that offense and the fact that the guys ahead of him all have injury history. But when you think about Mostert, I think on a 1-year deal, or it was like a 2-year deal that they changed to that they can get out of on 1 year, you know, if they play and Jeff Wilson, like the future of the Dolphins offense at some point, whether it's next year or 2 years, is Devon Achane and Jalen Wright. And that's pretty exciting when you think about you think about Jalen Waddle, you think about Tua, like, you know, Jalen Wright's dynasty stock went up significantly being selected by the Miami Dolphins, Jay.
Yeah, and I think that with the Dolphins, they were maybe not written off, but they lost some guys in free agency, clearly from the offensive line and on defense. And on the other hand, like the Jets have really fortified within the division. Patriots going to be more exciting. Josh Allen continues to exist in the AFC. So the Bills will always get attention. But this Dolphins team still is loaded in terms of talent. I think it probably went a little bit under the radar that they were pretty banged up last year. I mean, they lost half their defense by the time they were playing Kansas City in the playoffs. Devon Achane missed time. They had injuries along the offensive line, particularly to Teron Armstead. Jalen Waddle was banged up all season. Tyreek Hill was injured towards the end of the year. Like this team, even if they lost personnel, they should be able to replenish that just through health regression and just having their guys out on the field. And so I think that Wright just comes into that where, again, you'd expect that the Dolphins, if they are able to stay healthy, they should just be an explosive top five offense again. And we saw that, you know, Achane and Mostert were both able to provide a ton of fantasy value at the same time.
The first Saturday in May, no other day can compete the atmosphere, excitement, and glamour of Churchill Downs and the 150th Kentucky Derby, May 4th on NBC and Peacock. We're taking a quick break. When we're back, Eric Samulski and Roto Pat join us. We got fantasy winners and losers and draft grades coming your way. All right, happy to welcome on Roto Pat and Eric Samulski here. We get a little bit better, huh, Matthew? We lose Jay Croucher and we add two from the Roto World branch. You love to see it.
It's addition by subtraction just by the fact that we get a segment off from Jay, but then adding Roto Pat and Eric, two of the smartest guys at Roto World, at NBCSports.com. I appreciate you guys taking some time out to join us. Thank you very much. Thanks for making us better.
So guys, we were talking about our favorite day three picks right before you joined us, and Roto Pat, we'll start with you, and then Eric, did you guys have some day three picks that stuck out to you on a very, very long final day of the draft?
Very long, longer every year. By the way, Matthew, I will take the over on your life expectancy, by the way. I thought Jay was really going there, but
light money on fire, Roto Pat.
I'm smashing the over. I'm smashing the over on that. Listen, I had not heard.
Never forget that Jay Croucher lost a massive amount of money on DeMar Hamlin, comeback player of the year. So I'm fine with Jay taking the under. That's fine.
Before 2 weeks ago, really the only thing I knew about Malik Washington is that he was like a 40th year senior and that he had spent a lot of time at Northwestern. But the single season ACC catches record, he seems like one of the ultimate gadget guys you could ever find in the draft. And when someone from the Kyle Shanahan coaching tree once targets that kind of player, you have to take notice. And when Mike McDaniel takes Malik Washington in a receiver core, it seems so good, the Dolphins receiver core, because you have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. What else could you need? They needed something last year. Number three receiver was like a trouble spot for the Dolphins. And he looks like the prototypical number three receiver on paper. Like a guy who can do such damage from the slot, a guy you can manufacture touches for, can do stuff behind the line of scrimmage, all that. And just he fits the offense so well. He can be the big play guy. He can be the slot guy, though, that they didn't really have. I feel like dependable third down type guy behind Tyreek and Jalen Waddle. And I just love the Malik Washington fit so, so, so much in Miami.
I love the fit, Pat. I looked at Malik Washington in this draft and said, if you don't want to spend a day two pick on Malachi Corley because they're looked at premium gadget players, just take Malik Washington on day three and you could have the same exact usage. So I'm a big fan of that. Eric, who did you like on day three?
Yeah, it's another wide receiver for me, but it was Javon Baker who went to the Patriots. You know, this is the guy who is second in the FBS in yards per catch. He can make plays deep down the field. UCF also used him on some, you know, swing screens. He can really make guys miss with the ball in his hands. So I kind of like that effectiveness and that big play ability. This is the opposite of what Pat said, where, you know, Malik Washington was going to a loaded, seemingly loaded wide receiver room. The Patriots are not that. They have a lot of names that you recognize. You're like, oh, that guy and that guy. Oh, that guy's there now too. I mean, you know, it's KJ Osborne's there and Juju's there and DeMario Douglas and, you know, Kendrick Bourne's still around. But there's nobody who really stands out as being like a clear obstacle to a really good rookie. And Javon Baker has some inefficiencies that he can clean up. He's not a perfect wide receiver. That's obviously why he went in the fourth round. But I think the upside is really there. And I think the opportunity is there for a guy who's a big play threat. And so I really liked that as a day three pick.
Yeah, Eric, Javon Baker, not only one on the field, really good deep threat, just does all the little things right. Positioning, tracking, body control. I thought he had the best press conference out of any player drafted with the quote, bring your popcorn. I make people in wheelchairs stand up. Matthew, yeah. It felt like that was kind of a talking point thrown at you on that one.
Yeah, prepare.
Popcorn and standing up from a seat, a wheelchair.
Yeah, exactly. Two things. Listen, I love the popcorn. I don't like to stand up. So, you know, those are that's right in my wheelhouse. But I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
We like Pop Douglas and we like, you know, and. But I'm with Eric there. It's a pretty good landing spot for him.
All right, guys, let's get into just general winners out of the draft. And I'll start here with, this is an easy one, right? Xavier Worthy, a guy I didn't see as a first-round pick. I saw more of as a top 50 player. But he goes to the Kansas City Chiefs. And the easiest drawback for this one, if you want to look at usage or what Andy Reid thinks Xavier Worthy can be in this Kansas City offense, is DeSean Jackson. And I know it feels like low-hanging fruit, but Worthy is a guy, great speed, great tracking. He could simply stretch the field, make big plays down the field. We know Mahomes is going to, you know, push the ball down the field and build trust with Worthy. They have Hollywood Brown there. That's only a one-year deal. I still think he'll be involved in the offense. But if you're looking for a great spot to go, Xavier Worthy got his perfect place in this draft.
I think especially, by the way, because he can be more than just a burner and a deep threat. Where they didn't always use him the right way at Texas, but they tried to use him a lot of different ways. And even if he didn't have like a ton of success in 2022, I know like Steve Sarkisian didn't really seem to know how to use him. He has experience being used in a lot of different ways, a lot of different areas of the field. So hopefully he's not just a pure burner deep threat.
Yeah, if you followed Bill's Twitter on Thursday night, they're fitting Xavier Worthy for a Hall of Fame jacket. The fact that the Bills and then traded to the Chiefs, who took a wide receiver. It's just like all of that added up to everybody being like, well, obviously, if the Chiefs wanted him, he's going to be great. You know, there are some concerns about the size. Obviously, he is light. And obviously, you know, the other component is like, yeah, it's great. He has deep speed. You know, we've talked in the last 2 years about the way that defenses are taking away deep passing. So theoretically, it is a perfect fit. And it's great for Mahomes. Does that mean that all of a sudden the deep ball is going to open up again and they're not going to have to just throw over the middle of the field to Travis Kelce? Who knows? I mean, if there's anybody that can scheme this guy open, it's going to be Andy Reid, though.
The other thing I'll just say very quickly is that there's opportunity there, right? Especially long term. Listen, Rashee Rice, you know, had a great year, and obviously he's had some off the field issues and he'll likely be suspended. But at some point he will come back. But other than Rashee Rice, obviously, you mentioned Travis Kelce, but how much longer is he going to play? Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney, Justin Watson, all the other MVS, Mecole Hardman, all the other pieces that are there in Kansas City. There's a lot of names, but not anyone that other than Rashee Rice that you point to and say, yeah, that guy needs to be in the field every single snap. Xavier Worthy has that opportunity. You think about Andy Reid getting the extension. Obviously, Mahomes isn't going anywhere. So there's a really great landing spot here for Xavier Worthy. I think I saw this on Twitter, and a reporter saying that text from an AFC general manager when he found out that the Chiefs got Xavier Worthy. F me.
Checks out.
Checks out.
It's just such a good point, by the way, Matthew. Like, how often does this kind of opportunity open up in an offense that just won back-to-back Super Bowls? Usually someone like Xavier Worthy is going to an offense. He's like the Panthers that's trying to rebuild and surround young players with weapons. He's going to the two-time defending Super Bowl champion.
Which, if you ran back the tape after Sky Moore was drafted, I'm sure people said the exact same thing, which isn't to take anything away from the Xavier Worthy call. It's not always as simple as like the Chiefs are great. He's good. He's going to be great. I think it's a great landing spot for him. And I think the upside.
Yeah, but Eric, I'll push back on that. And I'll turn to Connor Rogers to fight my fight for me here. But I don't Sky Moore. I feel like the hype on Sky Moore was more about landing spot than the talent. Yeah. Right. Xavier Worthy was considered a first round talent, period.
Yes.
End of story. Now, where will he land? Sky Moore was like, oh, here's a guy that's kind of interesting. And all of a sudden now he's playing with Mahomes. But this is different in terms of like, here's a guy that we think was going to be a stud regardless of landing spot. But the landing spot happens to be, you know, one of the greatest offensive coaches in NFL history and the current, you know, GOAT of the NFL in Patrick Mahomes.
And Sky Moore was one of those like kind of postseason risers where he wasn't a like, oh, this is a first or second round draft pick, like coming into the year. You know, then he really started to gain steam and then he went to the Chiefs. And then it was kind of like a perfect storm of he's going to be a, you know, a fantasy superstar and it never materialized.
Eric, who is a winner for you that, you know, in terms of where they went?
Yeah, I had JJ McCarthy. It's not a surprise where he went. Like everybody thought he was going to end up, you know, there in Minnesota anyway. There's a couple things I really like. First of all, obviously, anytime you're throwing to Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, that's a huge win. And TJ Hawkinson, whenever he's back, we don't, you know officially the recovery time from the knee injury, but that's three massive weapons. And that's huge for any rookie quarterback. Also huge upgrade for the Vikings in the running game with Aaron Jones there now. And that's just always nice for a rookie quarterback too, to have a much better or better running attack than the Vikings were able to put together last year. And so that's a good little safety blanket as well. I think also like, listen, Sam Darnold has always been a talking point in terms of like, failed draft picks or, add him to the list of Jets draft picks that didn't pan out. But he is a competent enough quarterback that McCarthy doesn't have to be thrust immediately into the starting lineup because the Vikings don't have anything else. If they want him, to bring him along a little slowly, let him play week 5, week 6, depending on how he progresses in the offseason, it's not him or nothing. So I think you have good pass catchers, a solid running attack, somebody who can be a bridge so that he doesn't have to get on the field until he's ready, and a scheme that really benefits kind of opening up the, the passing attack and really pushing the ball downfield. And I think it's a great landing spot for a guy who, I have some Michigan bias, obviously, but I think is going to show people that he is a far more competent quarterback than some people believed he was because he played on a college team that didn't need him to carry the load for them.
My only quibble on JJ McCarthy to the Vikings, say what you will about him, it is true that he was spoon-fed at Michigan, where they ran to pass the ball. He was managed and manipulated. He was put in position to succeed. Like when he did pass, it was in good situations. Of course, he wasn't asked to pass very often. And I just worry about going from a team that runs to pass to a team that passes to pass. Like, we'll see how much Kevin O'Connell can really change the system. He's from the McVay system, which is very versatile. We've seen all sorts of different styles out of Sean McVay, but we've only seen one style out of Kevin O'Connell so far. And if you're going with a super pass-heavy, pass-first system, J.J. McCarthy is, of course, not the first guy who comes to mind. But so much talent, both on the coaching staff and in the locker room.
I mean, sure. And that's the point, right? I mean, that's just a – sorry, Eric.
No, go.
That's the point I think that Eric's making, Pat, is that like he's going to play indoors. He's going to play for a pass-first coach. And so even if he struggles a little bit, even if he's not the most efficient guy, the volume and the talent of the players around him, plus the play calling. Kevin O'Connell, I think, is a really good offensive play caller.
Elite.
I mean, Kirk Cousins, looked as good as he's ever looked under Kevin O'Connell in that offense, in the dome, with those playmakers. And so I do think that, well, you can argue that maybe McCarthy's a little bit more manufactured and like set up to succeed than maybe other college quarterbacks coming out. I don't see why that can't continue fantasy-wise. He made Josh Dobbs a thing. He made Josh Dobbs a thing, right?
He made Nick Mullins a thing. I mean,
I'm just saying.
At least, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, Connor Rogers.
I think also there's this idea, like, yes, the spoon-fed aspect, I understand what you're saying, but in opportunities where McCarthy had to make plays on his own or make plays in less advantageous situations, he made them. So, like, a couple of the stats, like, you know, his completion percentage on scrambling was over 71%, and then his third and long completion percentage was 73%, and he completed first downs on over 55% of third and longs. So there's an idea that, like, those are not advantageous situations, right? Getting into that isn't like, oh, that he was spoon fed to be in a situation to be able to, like, get a layup throw for a first down. Or, you know, he had a really good offensive line, so he always had a clean pocket, and that's why he made good throws. Those things happened and they're true, but they're not the only narrative of him. And I think that we didn't see those opportunities that were disadvantageous to him as often, but I think he answered the bell in those situations. And I think he's going to be able to do that, you know, not maybe not immediately, but within his rookie year, within his NFL career, that skill set is there.
Pat, who ended up a winner for you?
Listen, you could argue this guy would be a winner wherever he went. And you could also argue you want your first round elite wide receiver to catch passes from at least someone like middle of the pack and not like a bottom three or four quarterback situation. But I think Malik Nabers to the Giants really is a winner because he's going to be the sun, the moon, and the stars of this offense, basically. And he's the kind of receiver where quarterback play just doesn't really matter. He takes short area targets. Not the only thing he takes, but he takes short area targets. He's the classic rolling ball of butcher knives after the catch. He can be schemed the ball so easily from a coach who schemes the ball so easily. Kind of all Brian Daboll's done with 2 years to the Giants is create manufactured touches and try to get the ball in playmakers' hands because they haven't had the downfield talent and they haven't had the quarterback talent to deliver it. And so you see Malik Nabers with Daniel Jones and Drew Lock, you're like, man, like, what a waste. Like, are we going to have like 2 or 3 years of Malik Nabers' career? He's not living up to his potential. But, I mean, he's fighting for targets with Wandale Robinson, Darius Slayton, and Jalen Hyatt, and Theo Johnson, the rookie, like you guys mentioned. There is potential in that group, but this is still like a bottom basement skill core. And betting only on opportunity and projected touches can be dangerous with rookies, but I just think he really is like that scheme. The scheme doesn't matter. The quarterback doesn't matter. Like, you can get the guy the ball so easily, and they are going to do so in New York.
Yeah, I'm with you, Pat. He's quarterback proof, which is a crazy thing to say about any wide receiver. But when you look at the situation Garrett Wilson went through when he went offensive rookie of the year, and then obviously Rodgers got hurt last year and he was still really good. Guys that know how to separate within the first 0 to 8 yards and are also effective off of manufactured touches and then can stick their foot in the ground and win over the top, really win at all three levels, those guys overcome those situations. And you nailed it that the opportunity is just insane. I mean, Matthew, we're going to be talking about Malik Nabers all summer.
Yeah, for sure. And like Jay's made this point before as well. Like Daniel Jones struggled last year. Daniel Jones is fine. Like, again, give Daniel Jones a healthy season, a little more playmakers around him, maybe a better offensive line. But, like, the idea that Daniel Jones is, like, some sort of, like, disaster.
He's not Zach Wilson.
He's not what the Jets had last year, for sure. I mean, he's not Ben DiNucci. Like, I'm just, like, and all
Desmond Ritter. How long can we do this?
Daniel Jones.
Kenny Pickett.
Daniel Jones is going to be fine. For the purposes that we care about him, which is getting the ball to Malik Nabers, he's going to be perfectly fine. Like a year ago at this time, Daniel Jones had gone on the road, beat Minnesota in the playoff game, got a massive contract, and no one was going like, what are the Giants thinking? No one said that. You know what I mean? Like he had one bad year. It was a very bad year. I get it. But and it didn't help that, you know, Tommy Cutlets comes in and lights everything up. And Tyrod Taylor, and they both look better than Daniel Jones. I get it. But I'm just saying, for our purposes, can he get the ball to Malik Nabers, especially when they're going to scheme touches for him? Yes, obviously can. I agree with you, Connor, and I agree with you, Roto Pat. Malik Nabers, there's a lot of videos going around on social media about, like, how happy or unhappy he was to go. And, you know, he thought he was going to catch passes from Justin Herbert, and now it's Daniel Jones. But fantasy-wise, just he's going to get a massive volume and if some of them are off target, whatever. He's going to be a stud.
Well, Matthew, speaking of Herbert, close us out with your winner.
It's Ladd McConkey. I don't know why Connor Rogers hates Ladd McConkey with a fiery passion. He does. He did not like it when I picked him in our dynasty, my dynasty draft that I'm in. I'm in a league with a bunch of a lot of your former colleagues, like Scott Barrett and Graham Barfield and Evan Silva. A lot of these guys, all sharks. It's a tough league, and we do our draft because Barrett's an animal. We do our rookie draft prior to the NFL draft. So anyway, my second round pick, Ladd McConkey. Connor hated it.
Pat. Oh, but it was Ricky Pearsall or Ladd McConkey, and I said Ricky Pearsall.
It's fair.
Who's but taken went, first by Kyle Shanahan?
Which is true. I don't know. I just kind of like Ladd McConkey. I don't know why. But one of the things I like about him, Connor, in all seriousness, I like the versatility. He can play inside. He can play in the slot. I thought there were more opportunities for him to come into the NFL and have an immediate fantasy impact. My team is built to win. And so I did that. You think, and could not have asked for a better landing spot for Ladd McConkey than the Los Angeles Chargers of Anaheim, where there are over 300 targets vacated with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams moving on. I want to give you guys a list. Here's a list, okay? Here's a list of every Chargers wide receiver that for their career have more than 38 receptions. Josh Palmer. That's the list. That's what he's competing with. Yeah, I mean, Quentin Johnson, like, whoa. I just honestly, Gerald Everett's not even there. And I get it. I get it. Harbaugh and Roman, they want to run the ball. I understand that. There's concerns about that. But even if you're running, you think about those Baltimore teams. They're still productive wide receivers. They're still going to throw somewhat. And the fact of the matter is given the massive talent, the massive target opportunity, McConkey's ability, and the fact that Justin Herbert, regardless of what we think fantasy-wise, because they're going to be more run-heavy, Justin Herbert is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. So he lands in a spot where there's very little target competition with an unbelievable quarterback. And by the way, defenses that are going to be focused on stopping the run. So this is just an amazing landing spot for Ladd McConkey, my guy. Connor, for some reason, hates with a fiery passion.
Yeah, I think also the interesting thing you mentioned that Harbaugh's coming in, and so everybody's they're going to run the ball. But he was pretty a little more creative over the last couple of years at Michigan with the way that they got wide receivers the ball. There's a lot of bubble screens. There's a lot of play action. So using the narrative, right, of the run game to create that play action, which opens up opportunities. And McConkey is a guy who consistently can get open, especially in short areas, that if you're hey, we're going to take a five-step drop and, chuck it down the field to you, maybe not the best guy. Hey, we're going to use pre-snap motion. Hey, we're going to use play action. We're going to move the pocket. We need you to get open 5 yards down the field and then take it for 10, 15, whatever. That fits into his skill set. I think it's a good landing spot from opportunity, but also I think the scheme fit is better than just they're going to run the ball a lot and he's not going to get opportunities. I think he will in a scheme that's tailored to his skill set.
You guys hit the nail on the head where it's not just about the opportunity, which is stratospheric, as Matthew pointed out. There's no one who's even ever caught the ball on this team. It's the intent where they just don't want things to be so complicated and hard for Justin Herbert this year. They don't want him throwing 45 times a game. They want to have a real running game for the first time ever. They want to have some easy passes. Ladd McConkey profiles this as the ultimate easy pass guy over the middle of the field. It's such a good landing spot.
All right, guys, we're going to go around the horn on losers here, and I'll kick us off with Adonai Mitchell of the Colts. Listen, a little bit of a fall for Adonai Mitchell, somebody that was viewed as a potential first rounder, viewed as a potential top 35, top 40 pick. And I understand he's got all the ability of what you'd want in a number one wide receiver, but he's got to dial into the consistency. And he goes into a situation where if you wanted anything year one from Adonai Mitchell, I'm a skeptic right now. I mean, number one, Josh Downs should and will get a lot of targets in this offense. They paid Michael Pittman Jr. a lot of money. I think Mitchell can eventually cut into Alec Pierce's playing time. He has more talent than Alec Pierce. I don't think he's going to be served that on a platter out of the gate for a team, by the way, that the identity is supposed to be the offensive line, a workhorse running back in Jonathan Taylor, and a quarterback that, yes, he got injured last year and needs to protect himself, but the run game is still going to be a vital aspect for Anthony Richardson. So the rookie impact of Adonai Mitchell went from once upon a time, he's going to the Bills or the Chiefs in the first round. He's going to be relevant in redraft leagues, not just dynasty, to now he's, the fifth, sixth option on the Colts? I'm out this year.
he was a guy, yeah, who was supposed to be sliding into a number two or three role. And now he has like a bona fide competition. Like, can he beat out Alec Pierce to be the number one outside guy? And yeah, coupled with the character concerns, whether those are real or not, yeah, very, very concerning landing spot for A.D. Mitchell.
Mm-hmm. Pat, who do you have as a loser?
Listen, people have been talking about the Malik Nabers reactions. The reaction I noticed on draft night was Brock Bowers when the Raiders called him, where I almost thought, like, this guy looks like he's taking a phone call and he just, like, failed a PED test or something. Like, he looks, like, very unhappy, like, very, very distraught. And maybe he's not. You know, I'm sure he was ready for anything. But with the Raiders, it's not just about Brock landing. What is a crowded skill core with Davante Adams, Jacoby Myers, of course, the second year, really good young tight end, and Michael Mayer. It's, again, it's about the intent. They want this to be a smash-mouth offense. They want the passing volume to be limited, I'm assuming. And just and the quarterback play, too. Like, Gardner Minshew, you know, he's the ultimate, like, meme quarterback. Like, he's going to be, like, a cult hero for as long as he's around the NFL. But he's a guy – he's kind of a one-read guy. Gardner Minshew locks on to Michael Pittman last year and just peppers him with targets, didn't support anyone else in fantasy. So you have a guy who only supported one guy last year in Indianapolis – trying to feed four different people in an offense that's going to be run first and smash mouth. Just really could not have thought, dreamed up a worse landing spot. I thought for Brock Bowers, who could have been like Dalton Kincaid, I hate to say steroids again, like Dalton Kincaid on steroids this year.
Yeah.
He could have been made such a huge rookie impact. Now you're hoping for what, like Pat Freiermuth or Tyler Higbee? It's just such an unfortunate landing spot for Brock Bowers.
Not only do I agree with you, especially because, by the way, the Raiders are one of the teams that obviously were very rumored to take a quarterback early. They did not in this draft. So it appears that they're going to the season. It's either going to be Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell. And so I'm with you. They want to run the ball with Zamir White. They want to play good defense. They want to hide their team. And so, as you mentioned, they have a lot of pass catches to feed. I have a crazy take for you, which I think, you know, 48 hours ago would have been seen as insane, but I want everyone's reaction to this. I argue that fantasy-wise this year, among tight ends, Ben Sinnott has a better fantasy year than Brock Bowers.
Hail the Flanders, hail victory. You're out of pocket with that comment. You're completely out of pocket.
Who's got more opportunity? He's got a better quarterback.
Brock Bowers is just such a better player.
He's
the one of the best. I mean, I
get it, but...
Man, no, I can't. I can't.
We're not arguing talent, Connor Rogers.
I know. That's swinging too far an opportunity.
Eric, Pat, am I crazy with that take? Is that a crazy
take? Tell me
he's
absolutely out of his mind.
I think it's a little crazy. But I will take Matthew's point and maybe sand it down a little bit and suggest that maybe it's just that, like, I don't know if, say, you're in like a 12-team league, like, yeah, I think you're drafting Brock Bowers, but like maybe you're drafting Brock Bowers. Like, he's on the fringe, and I think he'll be on waiver wires in some shallow, like 12, 10 and 12 team leagues in particular, because I don't know that after like an immediate reaction, I don't see putting him inside the top 10 tight ends right now.
No.
And that's without like really diving in. You could see him closer to 15 by the time you're like really going through everything and the landing spots. And like, so maybe
you got all the obvious studs and then you got Ben Sinnott. So, I mean, like, exactly. It's hard to get him inside your top 10.
Ben Sinnott 13 and then 14 for Brock Bowers. Yeah.
There you go. Thank you, Eric. You get it.
It's on
you're
the bold
back on the show.
It's on the bold side, your take, but there's not a lot of competition in that tight end room. I mean, maybe Zach Ertz, I guess he'll make the team.
The ghost of Zach Ertz?
Exactly. Like, it's a winnable competition for him. There is a lot of target competition for the wide receivers, but if we get like this wild hair Jaden Daniels offense, this could be like a shootout team this year. Ben Sinnott
Cliff Kingsbury wants to throw it. It obviously depends on Daniels, but just I will say this. From the time that, speaking of Zach Ertz, and this shows you how long he's been in the league, but the year he got traded to Arizona, Cliff Kingsbury was the coach. And from the time he got to Arizona for the rest of the season, Zach Ertz was the fifth best tight end in fantasy on a points per game basis. Mm-hmm. I get it with Brock Bowers. That I'm not arguing that Sinnott's a better – I'm not that crazy. Obviously, Bowers is like a fantastic – you know, he led Georgia in receiving yards for three straight years. Like, Brock Bowers is like the man. But it's a bad offense with a bad – it's a bad passing offense with a bad quarterback and lots of target competition. All I'm saying.
Matthew, with your point, I think you can make a larger point too about Brock Bowers, is that basically you're now in a position where you're tie breaking against Brock Bowers. And maybe some people will still tie break in his favor when it comes to Ben Sinnott, but he's become a guy where if you're tie breaking, it's going to be usually against Brock Bowers.
Can I add, I mean, Connor, maybe you have a sense of this from the way the skill sets line up. Is this like a Michael Mayer replacement? Is this trying to go like Aaron Hernandez, Rob Gronkowski, two tight end sets?
Yes, Bowers is the slot.
Yeah. And that can work because, but listen, I mean, you also have the situation where the Bills coming into 2023 were like, we're going to use a two tight end set and Dalton Kincaid is going to be our like big slot.
Yeah. And then so much better.
That's no, like, but it wound up being like, okay, well then when Kincaid is good, Dawson Knox is not doing anything. Like we're not actually able to get both of these guys working on the field together. So I know they might plan to be like, okay, we'll use both. But it seems like it's a total death sentence for Michael Mayer.
I agree. Michael Mayer, get ready to learn run blocking, buddy. Right. Like, 100%. Like, that's – I completely agree, Eric. It makes what was such a promising tight end – because Michael Mayer was a monster pass catcher at Notre Dame. Yeah. Like, not like a good one. Yeah, like, exactly. A dominant force for 2 years in a row. It's just that he was the former regime's pick. It's very strange way to build a team, what the Raiders are doing. It just screams Zamir White, 600 carries and a lot of quick passes for Gardner Minshew.
Listen, I cannot wait. I'll predict this here. I will attend when Michael Mayer's jersey is retired by the Toronto Argonauts. I will attend that ceremony. I'm excited for that.
We'll hold you to it.
Yeah.
What if it's in Saskatoon?
He might be a Memphis showboat. Don't get me crazy. He might be a Birmingham Stallion.
A New Jersey general.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
Matthew, I know you'd go to Toronto. Would you go to Saskatoon if he ended up in Saskatoon?
Stop it, Pat. Come on, let's be crazy. I'm not getting on two planes.
Matthew, while you're on a heater, give me a loser here.
For me?
Yeah, for you.
Yeah. How about Rome Odunze? Poor Rome Odunze, who's so insanely talented. And there was a scenario where Rome Odunze was going to land in the spot that Rotopat talked earlier, that Malik Nabers, where he was going to be the guy in New York, the biggest media seat in the world, where he's going to be the focal point of what we think will be maybe not a great offense, but at least a semi-competent one. And instead he goes to Chicago, which is great for Caleb Williams, great for the Bears. But remember, Keenan Allen and DJ Moore, both top 12 in target share last year. They've also got Cole Kmet. They've got Gerald Everett, who Shane Waldron had in Seattle last year and had with the Rams the year before. Like, Shane Waldron loves himself some Gerald Everett. I tell my daughters, marry somebody that looks at you the way Shane Waldron looks at Gerald Everett. And then they go back to their TikTok and say, stop saying weird stuff. Yeah,
they say, leave me alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They're 12. It's a tough age to make Gerald Everett mentions. But what I will say is that, and you've also got DeAndre Swift out of the backfield. There's an argument that, after DJ Moore and Keenan Allen and DeAndre Swift, that at best, literally best case scenario, that Rome Odunze is the fourth option on this passing offense. And there's maybe it's a fifth if you count the tight end as one guy, because I think Kmet and Everett split targets. But Shane Waldron, who last year in Seattle got Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and Connor, I know last year we were talking about that coming into the draft last year, JSN was your number one wide receiver from a pure talent standpoint.
Yep.
We all love JSN. Then he goes to Seattle. Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf stay healthy. Both, and ultimately, JSN, whose talent we all loved, Ohio State kid, under Shane Waldron's play calling, finishes wide receiver 56 in fantasy last year. And so I just feel like Odunze, literally, there's a scenario where Nabers goes to the Chargers and Odunze goes to the Giants, or another team where Odunze is like, or the Jets, or something where he might have been more featured.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, or the Chargers, who knows? The fact of the matter is Rome Odunze, from what his talent is and what his opportunity could have been, it's a great situation for the Bears. I think it was a great home run pick for them. They're making Caleb Williams. They're going to make him successful. But fantasy-wise, Rome Odunze is a big loser for me.
He's injury dependent, and that's a scary place to be. And you highlight, Matthew, the tight ends there are really good, and it's like they've become an afterthought when everyone talks about this team, which is wild when you think of how good Cole Kmet's been, what they paid Cole Kmet, and that Gerald Everett is just always lurking somewhere and will sneak into five touchdowns and whatever, how many catches. So, he's an injury dependent fantasy player. Eric, what do you got for us with a loser?
I think we should skip me because Matthew just invited me back on the show. And I think after this,
you throw it away.
I might throw it all away. But my loser was is Troy Franklin. And I think I want to make it clear that, like, while Matthew's point about Troy Franklin was a day three pick, mine is in the larger scope of the entire NFL draft for a guy who most people had, I think, like a second round grade on, but there were a lot of mocks that thought, like, okay, maybe he sneaks into the back half of the first round because, or by back half, I mean like the final like five picks, because there are a lot of wide receiver needy teams. What if he's catching passes from Josh Allen? What if, you know, the 49ers get rid of Ayuk before the draft and he's catching passes in San Francisco or for the Chiefs or whatever, and he winds up in Denver? And I know he's catching passes from his college quarterback, and I know there's not a lot of talent in Denver. It's just not an offense that I really love. It's an offense that concerningly rotated their wide receivers a lot last year. And so just who knows what they're going to do with, you know, with a new quarterback and with new personnel. We don't know if that's going to continue, but we don't know what type of snap share he's going to get. I'm not like reading into, oh, he, you know, weighed a lot, weighed, you know, little at the combine. He was sick, whatever. I think he's a talented player. I'm not fully sold on Bo Nix, the NFL quarterback. I don't love the offensive scheme there. And I don't know that he's going to get immediate production. We'll see what happens with Courtland Sutton. We'll see what happens with Tim Patrick, who was re-signed and is coming back from you know, a knee injury, and who knows how early he's going to get back on the field. We talked about Marvin Mims. Josh Reynolds continues to play, you know, snaps, even if people continue to write him off. So there are guys that he needs to beat out for reps. And he could just be one of a handful of wide receivers that gets used in a rotation throughout the season in an offense that's probably near the bottom of the pack. And so for me, when you consider what his opportunities might have been to what his opportunity wound up being, I have him as a loser just in the overall scheme of where the, how the draft wound up for him.
Yeah, I get it. I really do. Go ahead, Pat.
I'll say quickly, when I was going through the day three names today, I honestly put Troy Franklin in the winners column, but I could see it being more in real life than fantasy, where I think we used to call it in New Orleans the Devery Henderson role. Like, Sean Payton always has like this field stretcher who can like contributes a lot down the field, but it's a little too volatile sometimes for fantasy. But I think Troy Franklin could maybe have that role right off the bat, be the field stretcher for Sean Payton, open up stuff underneath. Maybe Courtland Sutton becomes, you know, as he loses another step, like closer and closer to the line of scrimmage and not like the sideline dominator he used to be. I think it could be a really great role for Troy Franklin, but it could maybe take a few years in fantasy.
It's like what that's like a great best ball pick, right? Like, he might have a couple home run games where he hits on one or two like huge plays. But if you're just in a regular weekly league and you're trying to figure out if you should start him or not, it could be a headache for the whole season, really.
All right, we'll close this out. We'll each pick a non-rookie impacted guys, and I'm going to start with Aaron Rodgers here. The days of Aaron Rodgers being, you know, a guy that you want to start and redraft at QB1, the Jets are telling you everything right now. They want to be a run-heavy. They already have a great defense. They want to be a run-heavy team. They went out and bought an offensive line that their approach fits a lot of man-run scheme principles. They already have Breece Hall. What do they do today? And they have Izzy Abanikanda from last year. They draft two running backs and relevant running backs. Braylon Allen is now the number two to Breece Hall. Braylon Allen will get work. He'll get goal line work. You just look at the situation with this team right now. They want to play with a lead. They want to control the clock. They want to run the ball, and they don't want Aaron Rodgers to get hit, because when they lost them last year, four plays into the season, their season was over immediately. And yes, they have insurance behind him in Tyrod Taylor, but it's still not the same impact. So Aaron Rodgers in fantasy, it's not that he'll be irrelevant, but this is not a team that's looking to have him drop back 40 times anymore, Matthew.
Yeah, no question about it. And listen, they don't need him to. Like, they're going to have a great running game. They're going to have a great defense. He literally needs to be upright. And honestly, even if he got hurt this year, I think with Tyrod Taylor, like, they have more depth at the position. And, you know, Jordan Travis was an interesting day three pick as well. So they have more depth at the position than they did last year at this time. But literally for the Jets to accomplish what they want to do this year, Aaron Rodgers needs to be a league average quarterback. That's it. He just needs to be not terrible. Yeah. As long as he's fine, as long as there's a threat of him going over the top with Garrett Wilson, the defense and the run game will take care of everything else. So I'm agreeing with you, Connor. I'll just jump to my real quickly, my impacted player. And I'm going to say Trevor Lawrence. How about T-Law? I spoke with Coach Doug Peterson at the Combine. And I asked him, I said, what did you think of Trevor Lawrence's year last year? And Peterson said on camera to me, he says, I thought he was good, not great. I mean, which I was like, I couldn't believe his candor, but I agree with Coach Peterson. Trevor Lawrence last year was good, not great. And some of that was on him. And so he's a franchise guy. He's their guy. How do they protect him? So they went out this year. They lost Calvin Ridley. Fine. They go out and they signed Gabe Davis. Well, Trevor Lawrence by Brian Thomas Jr. being drafted by the Jaguars, this affects so many players. And I picked Lawrence as sort of the poster boy, but the fact of the matter is that Brian Thomas Jr. is like Gabe Davis, just better, right? Better, more consistent. And so, you know, this is a guy that led the NFL on deep touchdown passes last year in FBS. He was third most in terms of deep passing yards. So he's like a better version of Gabe Davis. And so this hurts Gabe Davis, helps Trevor Lawrence, and also helps Christian Kirk and Evan Ingram, because by having a consistent deep threat, the underneath stuff for those two guys is going to be there. Doug Peterson, former NFL quarterback, former Andy Reid coach, he likes to throw the ball. And so I just think that Trevor Lawrence, who came out of last year with a couple of question marks, is this guy going to be the franchise guy, the number one overall pick that he was drafted to be? And certainly I think, you know, there were questions after they lost Ridley, but adding Gabe Davis, but more importantly, drafting Brian Thomas Jr. answers a lot of those questions.
You lost real talent in Calvin Ridley, but I think it's a better designed offense. You have the two true sideline guys and can clear space for Zay, Kirk, and Evan Ingram, and I could not agree more.
Eric, what are you looking at?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest non-rookie impacted was Devontae Adams, and it was for all the reasons that Matthew was talking about just with the Raiders offense. The Raiders were a quarterback-needy team that was going to get a quarterback in this draft, or that was the narrative, and they didn't. And so you're looking at, again, an offense that's trying to hide, you know, their lack of quarterbacks. There are a lot of, you know, hospital balls thrown by Gardner Minshew last year when he was starting for the Colts. It's not like he is really fun to root for. Love Gardner Minshew. He's not a quarterback that makes me feel like really like excited about the wide receivers on his team. Aiden O'Connell, didn't stand out a lot to me last year. I think that this is an offense that's hard to get excited about. I don't think Devontae Adams is going to be necessarily much worse than last year, but I think you were hoping he was going to be put in a better situation. And he's not put in a better situation. And then I also didn't understand the rules of this, and I had an impact player that was impacted positively. And I put Curtis Samuel because, the Bills were going to trade for Brandon Ayuk. They were going to trade for Cortland Sutton. They were going to trade for T. Higgins. They were going to draft three wide receivers, and they drafted one, and it was Keon Coleman. And Brandon Bean said after the draft today, they're done. They're not making a trade. They don't have the cap space to make a big trade. Now, again, you know, believe a GM at their word, you know, to your own peril. But I the Bills really don't have cap space to make a big move. And so right now it looks like they're going to go into the season with Curtis Samuel as their number one wide receiver. And understandably, it's going to be a shared number one mantle with Coleman and Khalil Shakir and really Dalton Kincaid as the number one. But there's going to be tons of opportunities for Curtis Samuel when it looked like he might get buried behind bigger names coming into draft weekend.
My guy, Connor, is I go to great pains not to be a hot take guy, and it feels hot takey to me, but I think Kyren Williams is just a big loser in this draft. And listen, the entire second half last year, he was handling 25 touches per game, and he was handling them splendidly. But I just do not think the Rams want to run back that formula. He broke his foot as a rookie. He had the high ankle sprain last year. I think they have legitimate durability concerns about him, and they just rode him last year because they didn't really have another option. But now they have another option in Blake Corum. And I did our pre-draft write-up on Blake Corum. I buy into the narrative that Blake Corum is not an explosive guy. I don't think he profiles as a great NFL running back. But I mean, even Sean McVay – how can you draft a guy who scored 27 touchdowns for the national champion Michigan Wolverines and not at least give him an opportunity at the goal line? And he's the third back off the board. Draft capital is so important. the Rams have had success with both running back approaches, bell cows and committees. I just think they want to go back to that committee. They want to try to protect Kyren Williams and maybe in a way that hurts his fantasy value. I just don't see how Blake Corum does not get an opportunity to be the goal line back in this offense. And you can easily justify it. They want to save wear and tear on Kyren, save Kyren maybe more for the second half of the season. I just think Kyren has taken a massive hit with the Blake Corum selection.
Yeah, they used a pretty significant pick on maybe the most pro-ready running back in the entire draft in a scheme that is familiar to him. He comes from Michigan. They want to do man, gap, downhill. He goes to the Rams. McVay has really shifted from zone heavy to that man, gap, scheme approach. So that pick signals you are going to be a significant part of our future, and that future starts right now.
By the way, the Rams are not a team that have a ton of picks. And to your point, Pat, they need to nail every pick because it's not a team that is, flush with draft capital. And Kyren Williams last year, as great as he was, missed a month. To your point, they've had success with committee. And so it feels like a weird pick if he's just being drafted for depth.
DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NBA, and during the playoffs, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the app and use promo code Barry when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Huge thanks to Pat. Huge thanks to Eric. We're taking a break. When we're back, Jay returns to talk Rookie of the Year odds.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, Jay. It's great to have you back. We cannot do it's nice. We can't do Offensive Rookie of the Year, Defensive Rookie of the Year without Jay Croucher. So let's jump right into the Offensive Rookie of the Year odds, courtesy of our friends at DraftKings. And no surprise here, Jay, because of the talent being the number one pick and the situation he walks into, Caleb Williams is at plus 200, the leader on the board. Do you think those odds are fair? And is there really any value in the new? Do you think people are going to jump on this and he'll eventually be almost even at plus 100?
It could well happen, but I don't think it doesn't appeal to me now to bet Caleb Williams at plus 200. I don't think the odds are incorrect or anything, but plus 200 means a 1 in 3 chance that he wins Offensive Rookie of the Year. And I think that is probably about fair, but I think there may be more value just in waiting and just actually seeing and making sure that he does realize his potential. And look, he should come in short because he's the most talented quarterback and he has the best situation. And it's going to be a very high profile team in Chicago and a big market. So that's why he's plus 200. But I think the interest comes with someone like Marvin Harrison, who is plus 600 and I think is rightfully the number one skill position player and second on the board after Caleb Williams. I think that he is in the best position to succeed as the number one guy in Arizona with a strong quarterback there to boot. And then beyond that, I mean, some of these names I think we can not dismiss, but like Drake May, who may not even start in New England and doesn't have a great deal of weapons. Xavier Worthy, I think he's going to be excellent for Kansas City's offense, but there's also a chance that he is, the fourth option in their passing game, potentially, behind Rashee Rice, Marquise Brown, and Travis Kelce. We'll see how that evolves. Roma Dunze, we love him, but he's likely wide receiver 3 in that offense. And then Malik Nabers doesn't have the quarterback talent throwing him the ball, I think. So look at other names. I know it's not super exciting, but Bo Nix is going to be a starting quarterback from week 1, I think, in a Sean Payton offense. And the weapons aren't incredible, but he does have some pieces there. So he is one who I would monitor. He's 16-1. And then the other guy who is going to be the most divisive is JJ McCarthy, where if you think JJ McCarthy is going to be good from the get-go, like he has Justin Jefferson, he has Jordan Addison, he has TJ Hockenson when he comes back, he has an elite offensive line, and he has an elite offensive coach in Kevin O'Connell. So if you just think JJ is going to be good, then he arguably has just as good of a situation as Caleb, But Connor, the talent there, there's more question marks about JJ than Caleb, clearly.
Right, and you're dealing with the – I don't think, you know, Sam Darnold will be the starter for too long if he is, but you do deal with the question of if he's guaranteed to play the full season. He's not. I really like – I know it's a little chalky, but I like Neighbors and Marvin Harrison Jr. I mean, plus 900 for Neighbors, the targets will be there. Marvin Harrison Jr. is where I would put most of my, you know, shares on there at plus 600 because I think there's still value, and I think that'll move closer to plus 500, plus 450. Matthew, anything stick out to you? Sorry, Ben Sennett didn't make the board.
Yeah, and neither did Luke McCaffrey. It's outrageous. But I'll say two things. Two things while Jay was talking. I mean, like, I agree with the McCarthy call. I agree with Bo Nix is kind of interesting and Harrison as well. But to me, the two interesting names here, first off, Malik Neighbors, to your point, to your point about Neighbors, right? Massive target share, big market. And everyone's just writing the Giants off to just be terrible this year. If Daniel Jones is competent, if Daniel Jones is a 500 quarterback, and Malik Neighbors is getting like massive target share on, and the Giants are like not awful. It, you know, if they're a 500 team, like just again, explosive player, you think about Odell Beckham Jr.'s rookie year. Just again, New York loves a winner. They're looking for a star. This kid has star potential in that market, in that offense, given the amount of targets and work he's going to get. So I think that's really interesting. And you guys are going to call me a homer, and you're right to, but I'll just say Jaden Daniels. Again, think about how bad the Commanders are last year. They're picking second overall. Jaden Daniels, who, by the way, has won some awards in the past. Just saying. This is a guy that has gone against a lot of these other guys and has won some awards. So Jaden Daniels, in what should be a fantasy-friendly offense, under Cliff Kingsbury. And so Jaden Daniels, who, you know, again, I'm not saying he's Lamar Jackson. One other coach said, oh, he's Lamar Jackson 2.0. He's not. But he is a guy that can make flashy plays with both his arm and his leg. And again, I think it's all about expectations. Everyone is expecting Caleb Williams. I feel like Caleb Williams is going to get no credit for the fact. Like, even if Caleb Williams is good, they're going to be like, DJ Moore and Keenan Allen doesn't count. But if Jaden Daniels comes to Washington, which has been in the quarterback desert for, you know, two decades, except for 1 year of RG3, I don't know. I think Jaden Daniels is kind of interesting given the offense and the opportunity. Again, if Washington is not terrible this year, if they're just competent.
Yep. No, I think that definitely makes sense. And the good thing about Jaden Daniels is that you know that if he is good, it is going to be accompanied by insane statistical production. Like, JJ McCarthy might be really good, but it might be masked a bit by, you know, potentially if he is in more of a running offense, he might just be solid across
the board. And a good defense. Minnesota's going to have a good defense this year.
Yeah, like Mac Jones was very, very good his rookie year, but it's not like the numbers were super flashy in New England and he lost to Ja'Marr Chase. If Jaden Daniels is good, he's going to have huge numbers which promote an offensive rookie of the year case. I think the issue with betting the board at the moment, like we've just said, like 11 names of really good guys.
Right, right.
Like, and so I think it's better just to let it unfold. The last thing I'll say, though, is that the good thing with Neighbors, and you mentioned this, Matthew, the good thing about betting on a guy in the New York market, if he is the most deserving candidate, he is going to win. There is no doubt about it. Like, Chris Olave pretty much had the same offensive rookie of the year case as Garrett Wilson. And he just wasn't in the discussion because he was kind of in obscurity in New Orleans compared to Garrett Wilson in New York. And it's not that Garrett Wilson was undeserving, but they were pretty close in terms of merit. And Garrett just lapped him.
Let's close this out, guys. We're looking at defensive rookie of the year odds. Dallas Turner at plus 400. Leiatu Latu at plus 700. Jay, what do you think of this board, obviously headlined by the pass rushers?
Yeah, so I'd say historically, the thing to look at with D-Roy is that edge rushers win a significant amount of the time, and it's pretty much always guys taken in the first 40 picks or so. You don't really get guys who come from the clouds that frequently to win this award. And so you're looking at edge rushers who go early, and that's why Dallas Turner and Leiatu Latu are the two favorites. My question to you, Connor, though, is that why is Dallas Turner plus 400 and why is Latu plus 700? Is that just because, I mean, the Vikings, you know, they blitz a lot with Brian Flores and Danielle Hunter just had a ton of sacks in that defense that he's going to accumulate? I would think that Latu, who from everything I've been told is just as good of a pure pass rusher, if not better than Dallas Turner, going into a Colts team where Their pass rush was fine last year, but I mean, he should be able to beat out guys like Quiddy Pay and Samson Ebukam, I would think.
Yeah, Jay, I would have those odds flipped straight up. Yep. I would have it plus 400 for Latu and plus 700 for Dallas Turner. I look at Latu. He's one of the more pro-ready pass rushers I've seen in the league, and he doesn't have the athleticism and the length and the testing that Turner has, but he has a wide array of moves. He is going to be, you don't want to say sack artist because people think 18 to 20, but I think as a rookie, 10 sacks is in range for Latu. And Matthew, this will make you happy. Johnny Newton being down on the board at plus 3,500. That's insane value. Newton was one of the best defensive players in this draft. The only reason he didn't go in the top 20 picks is because he was recovering from the fractured foot that he didn't get to test. Newton is a stud. I think that should be almost plus 1,300, not plus 3,500.
I was going to mention Newton, and it's like, oh, you guys are going to just call me a homer. But screw it. You call me a homer anyway. But you're absolutely right. Think about, first off, he's going to a Dan Quinn defense. And obviously, the offensive line protections are going to be like, let's take care of John Allen. Let's take care of Daron Payne. So I think Newton, again, has an opportunity to get a lot of one-on-one matchups and be put in a position under Dan Quinn to put up some flashy stats. And so to your point, again, at plus 3,500, I don't mind taking a flyer there.
Yep. No, I don't mind that. And just the last thing I'll say is I know this is edge rusher focus usually, but, you know, Sauce Gardner won the award 2 years ago. You can absolutely win it even if you're not an edge rusher.
Marshawn Lattimore.
Quinyon Mitchell is 10-1 and Terrion Arnold is 13-1. And those two guys, they have a chance to be the number one cornerback on a team that could potentially compete for the one seed in Philadelphia and in Detroit. So look, 10-1, 13-1 when you're not an edge rusher, not super appealing, but those guys, I think, are guys to monitor, particularly Quinyon Mitchell, who will come in with all the narrative in the world after how bad the Eagles defense was last year. If the Eagles defense is better, if the Eagles are better and Quinyon comes in and performs from the get-go, then he could very well win the award.
Fellas, that's it for us. The next time we're together is the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
this, it will be. I've no designs on seeing Matthew in the next 3 days.
I'm sorry, what, Jay? Sorry, I talked over.
I have no designs on seeing Matthew in the next 3 days. So the next time will be the Kentucky Derby.
I'm gonna send you videos of me just waving to you in various states of undress. Just to bother you.
Okay. Nice.
Exactly. I'm going to see how many HR violations I can accomplish before we are all together in Louisville, Kentucky, live from Churchill Downs, where this will be replaced by a mint julep on Thursday as Connor, Jay, and myself and our buddy Drew Dinsick. That's right. Bet the Edge's very own Drew Dinsick will join us as well to give us some horse racing bets. So on Thursday, Love Hate will be out, an updated NFL draft. Love Hate will be out as well. We're going to have rookie ranks, dynasty ranks, updated ranks on the site on NBCSports.com and RotoWorld.com for free. Of course, I'm a company man, but can't wait to see you guys, especially in Louisville. Everything's better in Louisville.
Everybody's morale is high. So we will be back there. You will see us next time, of course, live on Peacock, the Thursday of Derby Week. For Jay, for Matthew, I'm Connor. Till next
time. Peace out.